You're listening to Stateside. I'm Lester Graham. Researchers are studying some oddities in the Great Lakes. Over the past several years, they've been examining sinkholes and the unique life that grows there. Steve Ruberg leads a study on Lake Huron sinkholes. He's with the Marine Instrument Laboratory at the Great Lakes Environmental Research Laboratory, which is part of NOAA. So how do these sinkholes form?
Well, we're sitting in Lake in Michigan on top of a karst geology, which means we're sitting on top of limestone geology. And what's happening is normal rainfall is dissolving that limestone, like it does in many cave systems, Mammoth Cave in Kentucky, those types of systems. Just the limestone features get dissolved. Streams of water start to flow through there, forming caves, eventually forming caverns. And when caverns get all the way to the surface, they actually collapse and form sinkholes.
I read in a Detroit News story by Beth LeBlanc that groundwater flows into the lakes through these sinkholes. How much water goes into the lakes that way?
Well, it's not a large amount. I mean, the predominant amount of water goes into the Great Lakes through either rainfall or streams. And these systems represent really a small input into the Great Lakes as a whole.
The groundwater that flows undergoes some changes as it goes through the limestone. It becomes not water as we know it generally. What happens to it?
Yeah, so what's happening is, I mean, you know, we're like I said, we're sitting on top of this limestone geology. That was actually laid down 400 million years ago, and there was a shallow seabed here. And as that seawater evaporates, salt is deposited, sulfur is deposited. And so now here we are with the system that we're sitting on top of. When rainwater turns into groundwater as it sinks below the surface, it dissolves that sulfur and salt. It loses its oxygen because it travels long distances under the through these rock layers. And when it comes out, there's no oxygen, and there's a considerable amount of salt and sulfur in these systems.
So what does that cause? What does that lead to?
Well, what happens is, I mean, since you don't have oxygen, then there's another sort of microbial world that we don't often think of. And there are chemosynthetic organisms that use that sulfur to actually carry on their life cycles.
Now, we've seen odd life pop up in like volcano vents under the ocean and things like that. Is this weird or strange or different than that?
Well, these are considered, the creatures that are in these systems are considered extremophile bacteria, and so they do fit into that same kind of category. We don't often think of the Great Lakes as having those things, but we do have that.
So I understand they kind of form into large mats. Can you describe what they look like?
Well, they range in color and in extent. For instance, the ones that are near shore are cyanobacterial mats. So these are bacteria that actually photosynthesize. And so they can range from almost a reddish purple to a very dark purple in color. And then as you go further offshore and you don't have light impacting the system, you'll have these patchy white areas, which you often see in the bottom of the ocean in somewhat similar anoxic environments.
I understand they swell up, though, because of chemical reactions underneath them.
What's happening with the nearshore ones is that they're creating almost a mat where gases can't escape that mat. And so they form these fingers as sort of normal gas is dissolving out of the sediments beneath them.
So these sinkholes, some of them are pretty deep, kind of otherworldly. What did you think when you first saw one? I'm assuming you saw one on a screen of some kind, right?
Yeah, I mean, so we're the technology that we're using to explore these systems is what is called a remotely operated vehicle. And yes, you're diving down into at least the deeper ones, into a pitch black area, and you're using only your lights. What you come upon is this cloudy layer that's along the bottom because of the difference between the groundwater and the surrounding lake water. And then you enter into that cloudy zone and you get to the bottom and you begin to see these unusual looking features on the bottom that are these chemosynthetic microbial mat.
So why is this fascinating to scientists?
Well, the really remarkable thing in a lot of these systems is at least the nearshore ones, is when you have a zero oxygen environment and you have this sulfur and salty environment, it's somewhat representative of what the early Earth looked like. And so some of our university partners have been looking at the possibility of thinking of these systems as representative of what the early Earth might have been like.
Is there any practical things that might be done with this new life that we found?
Well, I mean, I think just understanding how life formed on the Earth is a very practical component of it. The groundwater itself is of interest to us as an input into that water model. That's what we do here, is try to understand lake levels. And as many people know, they're going up right now. But during low lake levels, that groundwater input, understanding how much is actually going into the system, can be very important.
Long term, what do researchers really want to study further about these sinkholes?
Well, I mean, we want to continue to really understand that biology that's happening in there. I mean, another component of what we do is really understanding the ecology of these systems. But longer term, too, from the groundwater standpoint, we want to be able to measure the amount of water that's coming into into the lake through these systems.
Yeah, could it have any impact on we're seeing really high levels right now. Is this contributing to that?
Well, it does contribute, but again, it's not a large amount. It may make a bigger difference at times when we have low lake levels. We just came out of a period of time when we had low lake levels. Now we have high lake levels. But during low lake levels for commercial freighter traffic in the Great Lakes, just 1 inch of cargo loading can make a difference in how much money they're going to make off of their vessels.
And I understand you may have just scratched the surface on the number of sinkholes you've discovered so far.
Yes, I mean, this really started many years ago. There was a survey done at the Thunder Bay National Marine Sanctuary on Lake Huron, and we saw some areas that looked like that we might want to go back for further study that were in a very deep part of the lake. And as we started to look at them, we saw that yes, groundwater was coming out of them. But now we're wanting to look and see if there are many more of these systems that are throughout Lake Huron and potentially northern Lake Michigan as well.
Look, going to the bottom of Lake Huron a little better than going to the bottom of the ocean to find the kind of extreme life like this.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's what you have when you have a system that's fairly unexplored. I mean, we've fairly well documented that much of the ocean bottom is unexplored. Here we are on this planet, and we are rightfully looking at other exploration of planets within our solar system. But right here on Earth, we haven't really explored much of the oceans. And here we are right in the Great Lakes region. We don't really know that much about these bottom areas in the Great Lakes.
Steve Ruberg heads up the team studying Lake Huron sinkholes. He's a researcher with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's Great Lakes Environmental Research Lab. Thanks for talking with us.
You're welcome.